Sterling Allen with us. We're going to talk a little bit more about energy, flying saucer technology, and of course, take your calls right here on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, Sterling Allen with us. Sterling, how big are the saucers that the Keshe Foundation apparently developed?
He doesn't elaborate on that. I asked him the question about, in my interview in September, I said, if something were to happen to you, is there somebody or, you know, who knows enough to keep your stuff going? And he said 20 to 30,000 scientists in Iran. So that's kind of an interesting answer. Really quick, I want to mention, too, that December 7th, Friday, that's today, depending on where you are on the planet.
That's true. Yep.
Yeah. There's going to be an interview with Mr. Keshe by Carrie Cassidy over at Project Camelot.
Okay, good. She does a good job.
Yeah.
So we don't know the size of these things. We don't know how many occupants, how many people it holds.
Well, take this. He says that you put one of these devices on board whatever it is you want to fly around, and it basically you could turn a vehicle, a car, a truck, a shipping container into a saucer. You don't have to have any aerodynamics. I mean, this is crazy claims. It's so hard to believe, but this is what he claims.
All right, let's take some calls with you. John is in Woodland, California. John, welcome to the program. You're up with us.
George, it's awesome to get to talk to you. I've been listening to the show since way back in the Art Bell days.
Thanks for hanging in there with us so long.
Yeah, listen every night pretty much. I haven't called in for a long time, but it's just, yeah, you got a great topic tonight. I've been recently researching this interesting topic. It's the deuterium fusion reactor that a lot of different big-name universities are working on it, but a couple of college students actually managed to produce a couple of them for about $1,000 in their backyard.
What does it do?
It's a deuterium reactor. Basically, it's a fusion reactor which uses the fundamentals of this, how the sun produces its energy, by causing a fusion reaction with a deuterium atom, the very second elemental particle on the periodic table.
Yeah, I'd like to chime in on that. My understanding, based on some scientists who are under contract with Andrew Rossi down in Australia, fascinating conversation with them at an ECAT conference over in Zurich in September, he said that probably what's going on is that the hydrogen is going to deuterium, putting out a lot of energy in the process, and the nickel, it's a much lower secondary reaction, much more rare event in the process, is going to copper through several, about six different stages, you know, of nuclear existence as it goes from one state to the other. And it's probably not a fusion of hydrogen and nickel into copper. None of the reactions that are being called cold fusion right now are probably fusion. They're probably something else. And that's why they have to replenish these chambers every 6 months, is because deuterium quenches a nuclear reaction, and they get a buildup of deuterium, so they have to replace the chamber every 6 months so that it keeps running.
With any of these companies, are they publicly held or are they all private?
I don't know of any publicly held company. They're all, yeah, private.
Well, one day if they go public, they'll be huge, won't they?
Yep. But, you know, we can't have that attitude going into this. We need, you know, thinking about how rich people can get. We want to think of it in terms of, yes, the number of jobs that can be created, but not in any one, you know, individual or company that's going to have a lion's share of the market. There's going to be a lot of players, a lot of different technology genres, cold fusion being one of those.
Why aren't the major power companies around this country developing things like this? Why are they individuals and entrepreneurs?
Some of them are quietly paying attention and even involved in. I think Toyota, for example, is one of the financiers and people interested in this technology, just to throw out one name that has been in the news publicly.
All right, let's go back to the phones. Let's go to Hawaii, the island of Kauai. Charles is with us. Hey, Charles, go ahead.
Oh, I know Sterling Allen. I have something on one of his websites of a diode array, and a few prototypes failed, but one worked, and I'm wondering if I need a series resistor in front of each diode, which is in parallel, and these diodes pick up the Johnson noise made by the resistors.
Well, I appreciate your confidence that I would know the answer to that question. I'm a generalist, and I wish I was smart enough to be able to know all the specifics of all the different technologies that we cover, because it's an amazing array. There's some 15 exotic genres to match the 15 conventional. There's 15 unconventional and 15 conventional. When I say conventional, solar wind, geothermal, tide wave, ocean current, etc., there's 15 conventional ones and 15 unconventional ones. You've just touched on one of the unconventional ones, Tesla-type technology. There are a lot of great forums out there that you can log into, ask questions like that. I appreciate your interest. And I'm curious, question for you, how's the earthquake shaking things out there in Japan?
He's off the line now. So far, no more updates on that, so we'll monitor that situation. 7.3 magnitude off the coast of Japan. It's big. That's a tsunami. Well, actually, a tsunami warning in effect for the coastal areas of northeast Japan. That's just coming in right now. So there you go, Sterling. Bad news there. Let's go to Tom, Farmington, Missouri, east of the Rockies. Hey, Tom, go ahead. Welcome to the show.
Holy cow, I can't believe I get to talk to George and Sterling at the same time.
You got us both.
That's good. Hey, you know, I have a daughter that lives in Japan right now, and I'm trying to get a hold of her on email, but I haven't been able to, so I don't know how it's affecting, but my big thing here is I'm a little confused about what Sterling's talking about with all this stuff about we got to be enlightened or something before we can get any of this energy, because I'm going to tell you, if you think we're going to sit around and everybody hold hands and sing Kumbaya, and then all of a sudden everybody's, the big powers that be are going to jump in and fund these things, I think he's a little bit wrong there. I don't understand how that's going to help anything. What's the enlightenment part?
Well, remember, the Revolutionary War was won by a mere 3 to 5% getting behind the war effort. Everyone else was either on the fence, some of them even against it. It was just a small handful of people who made the difference. And once there's a critical mass, I would call that, then I think we win the day. And I think we're close. The powers that be are waking a lot of people up. And so I don't think it's a matter of we've got to get to the Kumbaya stage before we get this stuff, but we have to be close enough to it. Because some of this stuff will be allowed to come forth to the beta testers, the early adopters, to get it developed and strengthened before it goes to the world in large, is one of the steps of getting things out there. But that's just from my best guess of why we don't have this technology yet, because it's been around for a century. Tesla had a lot of cool stuff and others.
Windmills, though they're out there, doesn't seem like they're really going to catch on. How come?
The ones that are out there don't seem like they're going to catch on?
Well, the ones that are out there are there, but they just don't seem like they're going to catch on.
Not from my vantage point. They're catching on like crazy. There's a lot of traction underneath these things right now. Not as much as I would like to see, but they are making progress.
All right, we go to Tom in Orlando, Florida. Tom, thanks for holding. Go ahead. You with us? Tom? I know I hear him breathing, but he's not there. Midland, Texas, we go. Hey, Jeff, it's your turn.
Hi, George.
Hey, Jeffrey.
It's been a long time since I've talked to you. It's been years. I'm glad to be back, and you have such a wonderful guest, I got to tell you.
Well, he sure is. Go ahead.
Yeah, and I was going to say, too, you know, my heart goes out to those people in Japan. I mean, coming after this big disaster. I mean, before, and now, what's going to happen now? Who knows, you know? My question is, though, as far as the World Trade Center, you said it was brought down by something other than typical means?
Well, Judy Woods, who's a researcher, claims that a high particle energy weapon,
a free energy weapon,
free and beamed it down.
Okay, I've watched. Have you ever seen that video, the director's whatever cut, the one that the two guys from France, I think, that went there and filmed it all?
Yes.
Yes, I was startled by the fact that it seemed like a lot of dust and not much else.
Pulverized.
Yes, pulverized. And huge dust clouds coming up in this. What would account for that?
Well, Sterling, I'm not the engineer. We've had enough.
If you go to Judy Woods' book, she has a whole section on the Hutchison effect, documenting all the things they've observed with that. And there's almost a one-to-one identity between that and what they observed on September 11th and the abilities of things that showed up. I'm not saying that that was 100% Hutchison technology, but it certainly is an interesting clue and a tie-in. There's no doubt in my mind that exotic stuff was used on that day, that they're not going to be disclosing for any time soon. That if anything, you know, the world saw free energy demonstrated to them in a major way on September 11th.
Yeah, that could be too. Next up, James Slidell, Louisiana, wildcard line. Hi, James. Go ahead.
Oh, hi. All right. Good morning.
Hey, James.
And your guest, Sterling.
Sure thing.
Okay. This involves several factors that I have for you here. All right. You know of Halley's Comet, right?
Yeah.
It orbits, it comes into our atmosphere maybe every 80 years or so, something like that. But this is in retrospect to the guy that was on there earlier. And it would be nice if they had someone, you know, a crew that would go on a long-range space exploration. Well, I remember reading in a paper 15, 20 years ago that they would like to get a shuttle captured in the gravitational pull of Halley's Comet and have it to, you know, just go wherever it goes and then come back, right? Okay, remember we had the shuttle that exploded on its way up, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I think, now this is a doozy, I think that they did it because the administration at that time said that they'd have to do it now or it won't be able to be done until its next return. So I hope I don't offend anyone here, but I think that the crew that was supposed to have died on that shuttle, I remember they had a teacher board. Who's a teacher but someone that transfers information to others? Well, I think that they actually took that crew and secretly launched a shuttle and got it into Halley's gravitational pull. And I think all they would need is enough to go on the outgoing mission and the incoming mission. You know, they could use maybe cryogenics to
Well, what was so sad about all of that, and thank you for the call, Sterling, after the tragedies occurred to the shuttles, you know, the internet was packed with these incredibly poor graphics of, you know, they were all hoaxes. None of it was real. Pretty insensitive, I think. I would say everybody's entitled to an opinion. James is entitled to an opinion. I think that was those things just had horrible, horrible accidents written all over it.
Yeah, one thing that I would like to say in that context, and appreciate that segue, is whether or not Keshe's technology is real, there are teams out there, other teams working on the same type of technology, the ability to go up and lasso these technologies, either get them so they're out of harm's way, so to speak, so that they miss the Earth, change their orbit, and that's actually one of the things they advertise on the Keshe website in a video about this gravity technology, is that they will be able to protect the Earth from getting slammed into by one of these flyby or near, you know, something that could hit us, direct hit or a glancing blow that could do damage to us. That's a nice application, whether Keshe is able to do it or some other company. I do believe that the private sector is going to come up with technology in the next 10, 15 years to be able to do that. And certainly the powers that be have had, in my opinion, this technology for decades. And a lot of the UFOs that are up there are of our own making, black budget projects. Not all of them. Obviously, we have visitors from other systems watching our show.
I just, you know, even if there's a black ops budget up there, Sterling, I just can't understand how they would, you know, a lot of people who believe in conspiracies would say that they want to just draw out these wars forever, you know, just to make more money rather than end them. But, you know, I would think if you have this kind of technology, you'd use it quickly, get it over with, and it's done.
If everyone is like you, that's the way it would go.
Yeah, but they're not, are they?
Nope.
Next up, we go west of the Rockies. David in Anchorage, Alaska. Hey, David, go ahead.
Hi, Sterling. Yeah, I was friends with Timothy Thrapp when he lived in Alaska, and I was actually able to see one of his machines about 2 days after he came up with it. I think it was delayed line generator. I think you know who Timothy Thrapp is.
Yeah.
And, you know, his stuff is actually really real. And I was wondering what you thought about Tesla technology of cold electricity, that third form of electricity, not AC or DC, but pushing against the ether and having the ether rebound back with more energy than you put in.
Absolutely. And I would say that what you just said capsulizes quite well what we see a lot of researchers chasing after, with some pretty good success in some cases. That kind of talk is in the forums quite regularly. Really quick, I want to set the record straight. I could see how somebody might be able to do a quick Google search and link my name to Breakthrough Power. I'm actually not one of the authors on that. I'm very good friends with Joel and Gene.
Even our producers think you are.
Yeah. it's an excellent book. It's a great primer.
It's a great book. Take credit for some of it, Sterling.
Well, I can take credit for writing a lot of stuff along those lines, day after day, putting stories up for a decade. I've got a lot of writing to my name, but not in the form of a book yet. But really quick, on Timothy Thrapp, for people who are Googling that, he's quite an enigma. I do believe he has a gift for replicating stuff, but he doesn't have a gift for business that you see quite often in the industry, own worst enemy phenomena. You know, he has a lot more skeptics than friends. I'm glad to hear from somebody who was there up close and personal in early days. I tend to want to give him the benefit of the doubt that he's got something. If somebody like you could hold him by the hand and get him to talk business a little more normally, we could see some of his technologies get to market.
That would be dramatic, wouldn't it? I want to see this. I want to get it done. I want people to be able to have affordable energy. I'm more concerned about the future of our kids, not us. We're going to be okay.
Yeah, I don't think we have that much time. I don't think December 21st is going to be the end of the world, but I see things melting down pretty fast. We're going into meltdown mode. And to use an addict analogy, we're about to hit the wall, and we don't have to hit
splat.
The wall. Yeah. We don't have to go to worst-case scenario, and if we can wake up before that, then we can prevent and at least mitigate a lot of the stuff the powers that be have in store for us. And so I would love for that, you know, 5% revolutionary force to stand up, wake up, and get out there, get these free energy technologies out there, empower the people, and do an end run around the powers that be.
Okay, we're going to come back in just a moment here on Coast to Coast AM. We're going to take final phone calls with Sterling Allen as we're talking about all things energy next on Coast to Coast AM. On our next Coast to Coast program, Pearl Harbor Day, we'll devote the first hour with Douglas Dietrich in honor of our fallen military on that fateful day. Pearl Harbor Day on Friday night, followed by Open Lines on Coast to Coast AM. Sterling Allen with us. Sterling, do you think these cutting-edge technologies, these breakthroughs, are coming from engineers or people with just great minds?
There's a whole gamut there, all of the above and everything in between. Everything from college professors who are doing stuff on the side or even in their labs that get kicked out of their spot because of what they're doing, or get marginalized and poo-pooed and frowned upon, to garage tinkers, to guys who don't know a watt from an amp who happened to get something that works. It's pretty crazy, the level. You know, we tend to believe that things that are going to really make a big difference are not likely to come from the status quo. And so we tend to keep our goggles on the horizon outside in the garage rather than in the institutions. It's almost like if it comes from academia, I'm not interested, because there's plenty of people that will support it. We're trying to support the little guy that doesn't get the support because they're frowned upon by the mainstream.
Well, that's true. They are. Okay, to the phones we go. Harold, Poplar Bluff, Missouri. Hi, Harold.
Hey, how you guys doing?
Good. Thanks for calling.
George.
Thank you.
In a very interesting topic, Charlie, I have something here. This is probably a bit elementary for what you're used to dealing with, but it's a question I've thought of a few times in the past. And the top of my thing is mine. Once a vehicle is in motion, why hasn't anyone thought to just basically attach a generator to one of the wheels and let the wheel that the vehicle is already dragging along generate enough electricity to keep the car in motion indefinitely with no use of any fuel?
Well, you have losses in any system, and so you have to overcome friction. And so if you're having a generator that's harnessing energy as you're going down the road, that's additional energy you're having to put into your motion that's later to be harvested. But speaking of what you just said, we put in our news a couple of days ago a guy who claims that he had a scooter that he did just that. On the front wheel, he put a motor, on the back a generator, and he swapped them back and forth so that as the battery went down on one, it was recharged on the other. He claimed he went 1,300 miles consistently over and over with that scooter. He'd go 8-hour days driving the scooter, harvesting the energy on the one end. We actually, that's in our top five, number three is a self-looped motor generator system where you have a small motor turning a larger generator that loops back to keep the motor running while the generator produces excess energy for use. That sounds like lifting yourself up by your bootstrap, but actually there's some phase angle stuff going on electronically that may be getting a beading effect, as B-E-A-D-I-N-G, that gets some resonance going with the environment around it that actually pulls in energy from the surroundings. There's a lot of companies that are actually producing not a lot of companies, a lot of individuals for the most part. One company two companies that are pursuing this. One of them is working on a 1 megawatt output using this principle. So I wouldn't completely reject your concept out of hand. Really quick, George, I want to compliment you and congratulate you on launching your new Beyond Belief segment with Gaia MTV. I did it.
We're looking forward to that. Yeah.
Yeah, I saw your little blurb, your little teaser on your homepage right now at Coast AM, Coast to Coast AM. I did a segment with Guy on TV last September. Excellent, excellent outfit.
Great people.
Bullock, Colorado, where I grew up.
Yeah, they are great. We're looking forward to this working. You know, it's internet-based, Sterling, but, you know, I think it's going to grow. And, you know, I'm going to mention in a couple weeks something I'm going to do with some of the compensation I'm going to be getting from this. And, you know, I think everybody's going to be very happy and intrigued with that.
Are you going to be the next daytime Oprah?
I'll never be daytime. Maybe nighttime. Of course,
what they say about radio? Those who listen to morning radio don't believe in UFOs. Those who listen to afternoon UFOs think it's possible that there are UFOs. Nighttime radio listeners,
we think everything's possible,
believe in UFOs, and then those who listen to late night UFOs have been on UFOs. I mean, late night radio have been on UFOs.
That's true. How did you get interested in all of this, Sterling? I mean, have you always been a technical-minded person?
Well, my dad's an atomic clock physicist, got the Time Lord Award last year for his work with the atomic clock in Boulder, Colorado at NIST. So I've got some genes there, but I've also been outside the box. My mom got into herbs when that wasn't popular, and just learned a lot of really cool stuff outside the box. And when I was going to college, a friend handed me the book, None Dare Call It Conspiracy. That's also how Alex Jones woke up.
That's right. It is.
I read that book and it's like, oh my gosh, how could this be true? And I've never heard about this before. And yet the endorsement on the back was Ezra Taft Benson, the guy who was then president of the Mormon Church. And I was part of that group at that time. I was since excommunicated for being too weird. apostate, but yeah, I was listening to your show last night. I was really enjoying it. I can't remember the name of the guest telling his story about what his life path, and it was really,
that was either Bruce Goldberg or Christian Wilde, one of those two.
It wasn't one of those. It was a guy who's written a book. He was traveling on foot.
Oh, you were getting probably one of the refeed shows.
Oh, okay.
From some time ago.
Yeah, it must have been. But man, I could relate to that. I've done that kind of stuff, just outside the box stuff, just breaking loose of the
paradigm. Oh, no, that was John St. Augustine.
Yes, yes, yes.
Yeah, okay.
Yep. That's the one. I enjoyed that. And really quick, while we're on the subject of shows, I want to just mention that I've been approached about doing a reality show.
Oh, really? On what?
On the Free Energy Quest.
Really?
Track me around as I go around looking at these different technologies.
That's fascinating.
Yeah. And actually, one of the guys who's Scott Bales, who is on Discovery Channel with Underground Bunkers, got me hooked up with that with their producer, Dixon. And they just approached a network for the first time last week to do the show. So they've got the package ready and starting to hand it out to people. And so that'll be exciting if we can get that going.
Yeah, good luck on that. Okay, let's take final calls. International line, Chris is in Toronto, Canada. Hi, Chris. Go ahead.
Hi, guys. How are you doing?
Okay, Christopher. Thank you.
Great show tonight. I just wanted to ask your guest, what have you heard about Nazi anti-gravity technology? I have, I'm actually developing something much like this fellow that you mentioned earlier. That is developing anti-gravity for application to, putting anything like under a car or something like that, or even attach it to a motorbike. And, you give it lift, it burns less gas, or it could even fly depending on how much power you put in, right?
Sure will.
Yeah, Nazi belt technology, there's no doubt in my mind, there's a lot of evidence that they had. We're working on anti-gravity technology, probably had saucer technology, went to Antarctica.
What they have is, I'm trying to see if this works right now. I'm just collecting the materials, but they have this one thing that looks like it'll definitely work to me, and it's ferrofluid in a torus that's wrapped around with a coil, and, you'll have two options for lift with that. First of all is centrifugal force. Second of all, if you put enough power in it, like crazy power into it, it'll give you gravity. But there are a couple of tricks as to reducing friction so you can, use energy more efficiently.
Yeah, and this kind of conversation is what I get day after day and what I do. I get to run across these really cool technologies, try and check them out, and feature them in our news. So I would encourage you in your quest, and I think this is a case in point of, there are people doing cool things out there, coming up with proof of concept prototypes and phenomena that they can, repeat. We're going to see an end run around the powers that be that have been holding all this technology to themselves and not giving it to us. They're going to be made obsolete by people like you. I'm glad you called in.
Is there an end to how much technology we can create here?
What's so maddening about it is there's so many neat things that are being suppressed and being called, tinfoil hat conspiracy theory, junk science. And if we would just open up our minds and accept them and fund them and help them move forward, we could be in the world of the Jetsons 20 years ago easily. And yet, we're still 5 years away from that, 5 to 10 years of that kind of existence, in harmony with the Earth. It's just a matter of those crazy powers that be that don't want this technology out there because they want to be king of the hill.
Yeah.
It's an ego thing.
What's new with our buddy John Hutchison?
Yeah, he, like I said, he's right now working on mitigating the radiation coming from Fukushima, and he's also got a crowdfunding thing up, trying to raise $5,000 for some free energy work research that he's doing. He shows a video of a coil that is powering something or other continuously. It's solid state, kind of a chemical battery type of thing. But you know, he's drawing power from rocks and all kinds of cool stuff. He is one of the funnest guys to keep an eye on. It's just crazy but cool.
All right. Next up, speaking of crazy and cool, let's go to Schenectady. William's with us east of the Rockies. Hey, William, thanks for calling.
How you doing?
Good. Go ahead.
Basically, I wanted to touch on the Japan earthquake.
Okay.
Though it was mentioned earlier, not much was really mentioned on the fact that there's the existence of Park.
I couldn't hear you. You broke up right at the end. Existence of what?
Harp. It was HAARP.
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 HAARP's always on. You never know.
Yeah. Did you see how much HAARP was turned up when that Sandy came ashore?
Yes.
Full bore.
I had Nick Begich on when we were talking about that.
I got a room with him at this conference at Hilversum Holland last month. Awesome experience. I was with him for 3 days. I had some time to chat in the evenings. That was a lot of fun. And while mentioning that, you want to go to globalbem.com, Global Breakthrough Energy Movement. Look for good things from them. They're doing conferences and trying to coordinate the breakthrough energy movement worldwide.
Do you think HAARP could create an earthquake?
There's a lot of anecdotal one plus. You know, you put two and two together where those exist, the HAARP type signature things in the atmosphere and them being turned on, people to track those things. It's like chemtrails and weather. There's about as tight a relationship between that and HAARP and earthquakes as well.
Let's go to Tracy in Greenville, South Carolina. Hi, Tracy.
Hey, George. Long time listener. Love your show.
Thank you, Tracy.
What your guest is saying seems to me like it confirms some of my work with the unified field theory. I'm an amateur theoretical physicist. I'm just a taxi driver professionally. But it seems to me like it confirms the work that I've been doing. I was wondering if anybody else has made any breakthroughs towards the unified field theory.
Yeah, there's a lot of people making interesting inroads on that one. I don't try and wrap my head around that one. My brother does, actually. Oh, speaking of my brother, he's actually doing some of the programming work behind the scenes for Ancestry.com, what you just asked.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah.
That's a great little system.
Yeah. Anyway, he's been tracking the electric universe and all that kind of stuff. It's really cool stuff. We're going to find, I think, a rewiring of the unified field theory when we understand gravity a little better and inertia and magnetism. We just barely understand this stuff. We think we're pretty high and mighty in our scientific world. We're just infants. And yes, we will always be progressing in our scientific knowledge.
Tesla always believed that you could pull energy straight out of the atmosphere.
Yeah.
Nobody's really been able to do it yet.
That's not true. I'm all about.
I mean on a public basis.
Not publicly yet. Not publicly available. It's not at Walmart yet.
Right.
It will be within, I would say, a year, two or three.
That is
depending
dramatic.
Depending on which genre we were talking about.
That soon.
Yeah.
That is dramatic. Let's go to Pete in Lewiston, Idaho, west of the Rockies. Pete, thanks for holding. Go ahead.
George, thank you for taking my call. I've been listening to your show for quite a while, and I've been trying to get through. I had an experience here about in the mid-80s. I was living in Fairbanks, Alaska, and I lived up there about 30 years. Anyway, I was a private pilot, and a friend of mine and I decided to fly from Fairbanks to Yakima, Washington, And so this one particular day, we're flying along, and we're between Fort Nelson and St. John down in British Columbia, Canada. And I'm flying along. We're about 5,000 feet, and it's a perfectly clear day. Visibility was like 100 miles or more. And I'm about probably 300 feet off the side of him and probably 100 to 200 feet behind him. And I had a young fellow with me in the cockpit with me. And all of a sudden, there was this object that just came out of nowhere and flew right up and hovered right on the back of the tail feathers of the airplane of my friend that was in front of me. And I'm sitting there and I see that, and it came out of nowhere and it came so fast, it was unbelievable. And we're traveling about 140 miles an hour. And this thing hovered there, and the size of it was probably about 4 to 5 feet high. It was like a disc, like a saucer.
Mm-hmm.
And it was probably about 7 feet across.
I assume you would think it came from another world, or do you think it was man-made?
I had no idea. And I've been listening to these stories on your program now for a few months. And I've told a few people, I haven't told very many, but the thing that's incredible about this is, and the thing that prompted me to try to call you was here.
And I've only got about 30 seconds left, Peter. Go ahead.
Okay, you had a fellow on who was talking about these things can make a sharp 90-degree angle.
Well, that's right.
We're flying along 140 miles an hour to the south, and this thing all of a sudden made a right angle turn to the east, and in a matter of just a few seconds,
it turns on its own axis, which we can't do.
Yeah, it could. No, it flying 140 miles an hour ain't very fast, but this thing went a direct 90 degree angle in a matter of just a few seconds. It was gone. It had to be traveling, I mean, well over 1,000 miles an hour.
Yeah, that's something we don't have. Sterling, I want to thank you for being on the program. Appreciate it.
Thank you, George.
Anything we can do for you, you let us know. Good luck on your reality show as well. For Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean LaDesour, Stephanie Smith, Tim Banal, George Knapp, John B. Wells, Ian Punnett, and Art Bell, I'm George Norrie. Somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM, we'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.